Voices of the Elephant is proudly sponsored by SiteGround.com, a leader in website hosting and a terrific partner for all your website projects. Their top-notch technologies will make your websites fast and secure.
Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Voices of the Elephant. My name is Cal Evans. I'm your host, and I'm here with wonderful Olivia Liddell. Did I say that right, Liddell?
Yep, Liddell, you got it.
Great. Olivia, it is so great to finally have you on. We met, I believe, at Southeast PHP?
Yeah, last summer in Nashville, yep.
Yeah, I got to go back to my old haunt. I spent 20 years in Nashville. And loved it. But then I ran into you again and saw your talk at Sunshine, and I realized I had to right a wrong because I had not invited you on right after Southeast. So I'm so glad you could be with us here, and because I know everybody is dying to get to know you a little better. And having said that, let's start off the question I ask everybody the first time I interview them: what's your hero backstory? How did you get into programming?
Yeah, so my backstory goes all the way back to the dark days of AOL. My family got it, and I was about 11 years old. And, you know, you get online, you start going into chat rooms and message boards. And for me, I found that there are these software programs that you could download, like proggies and things you could use to hunt people offline, send them a bunch of code that would stall their computer. And along the way of downloading these things, I also came across this WYSIWYG editor called AOL Press. So I switched from kicking people offline and socially engineering them to realizing that I could create something. And what I liked about AOL Press was that you could build things. You could make it almost like a newsletter layout. And after a little while of using it, I saw that there's a button in there that you could click to reveal the code. And I didn't realize that with all these pages I was creating, that there was some underlying code. Mm. So as a kid, it was just so fun to build things from the WYSIWYG side and craft it, and then flip it around to see, well, how did that happen? What kind of code is building this up? And the more that I got into it, the less I needed the WYSIWYG side. And before I knew it, I was building these pages and these sites from code from scratch. And wow. That was really how I got into it as a child. And throughout my childhood and even into college, kept doing programming on the side, like student clubs. Whenever I was part of things in college, they say, hey, we need a webmaster. Okay, that can be me. And and then when I got into teaching in Chicago public schools for a number of years, I would do things like build my classroom website or one time. So I was teaching middle school Arabic. And, you know, children respond very well to gamification. They love it when there's a game that they can play to challenge themselves, challenge each other, and have fun with things. And there's a lot of games out there for reading, for math, for science, but not really a whole lot, if anything, for Arabic. So I took it upon myself to figure out how to create an original Arabic computer game to teach my children how to recognize Arabic numbers, throw in a little bit of challenge. Like if you get it wrong, the screen kind of blows up on you. And it was just a lot of fun. So it's something with programming for me. It's always had this constant, this presence throughout my career, regardless of what kind of industry I've been in, just to be creative and build things with it and help other people solve problems.
That is fascinating. I had no idea that you were a middle school teacher. My mother was a middle school teacher, so I sympathize. But no, mom loved it. She taught fifth grade. She taught English, and she absolutely loved it. Okay, so how did you no longer program day to day? Is that correct?
That's correct. More so okay. On the side.
How did you transition from programming into your new field, which is training and coaching?
Yeah, so I currently work at Cloud Bakers based here in Chicago. I'm a cloud training specialist, and we're a cloud migration company. We partner with different companies and organizations that are looking to
Let me stop you. Let's define these terms. What is a cloud migration company?
Oh, sure. So we partner with different companies that are, let's say they're currently using Outlook, Exchange 365, and then they're deciding, well, we want to transition into a different email provider. We want a different platform for storing our files and folders. And the main one that we work with is Google G Suite. So we have within Cloud Bakers, our engineering team that will make all of that happen behind the scenes from the technical perspective, project managers who oversee everything from start to finish. And then myself, I'm in a change management role where I figure out how is this change going to affect the end users? And then what do I need to do to train them to make it so that they feel comfortable and confident moving forward? And, you know, as this connects back to with programming, I think one of the things I love so much about having gotten into programming from a young age is how it really makes you get into the mindset of having to problem solve things. Because within trainings, especially, it is not always the case that things are going to go right, exactly right the first time around. And how do you do that? And so with myself, I use a lot of the problem solving to get myself unstuck in these situations when I'm working with customers who may not even know themselves what it is that they're looking for. Or sometimes I can help them to see, well, they're asking me, hey, Olivia, in my old platform of, let's say Outlook, for example, I used to be able to do ABC. Now that we're in Google G Suite, I need to do that same thing. How can we make this happen? And this is where a lot of the programming background comes in, because I will straight up tell these customers, you know what? What you're looking for doesn't exist out of the box, but let's get creative with this and I'll see what I can put together so that you get a little bit of this piece, a little bit of that one, some of that too. And then it's still, you're focusing on the overall outcome as opposed to saying, well, I used to do it this way moving forward. And people really appreciate that, because with programming, there's so much creativity that has to go into it. And you really have to listen to what your customer is asking you for. And I think it's really given me so much experience in being able to think outside of the box, craft something together, and then just having that overall satisfaction when you see someone using something that you've created, something that you've helped build and put together. And it's there's nothing else quite like that.
Well, see, I'm very jealous now, because you've taken the best parts of programming, figuring out problems and helping people, two things I love doing, and you've discarded all the bad parts, like unit testing, which I've been doing for 2 days now. And so you've got the ideal situation. Now it's time for you to be a game changer with the RingCentral Developers Game Changer Program. Grow your skills, help others in the community, and get rewarded with awesome prizes like RingCentral swag, conference tickets, software, iPads, computers, and so much more. Don't just be a developer, be a game changer and join the program today. For more information, visit developers.ringcentral.com. So you've transitioned into this. It sounds like a fascinating job. Talk to us. Do you craft when a company comes to you and says, we're moving from Office Suite to G Suite, do you have a set of trainings that you say, okay, I'm going to need A, B, C, and D, or do you sit down and craft a custom one for each customer?
We have a training menu that we pull from, and let's say we have Gmail trainings, Google Drive trainings, everything down to like Docs, Forms, Calendar, but then we always start with what we call a discovery survey. So we'll send out a survey to the end users to ask them, what's your current workflow like? What kind of things are you excited about doing in G Suite? What are some things that concern you about G Suite? And then we'll aggregate all the data, look at it, and then I'll see, oh, this is what people are really wanting to know. And oftentimes it'll surprise the project team at the company, because it'll reveal insights that they weren't even aware of. So sometimes we can even do a fully custom one, like if we hear from users who are having concerns about transitioning into Google Sheets because they've been using Excel forever. Then we can dive into that and ask them, well, what exactly are you doing in Excel right now? Let's pull these specific workflows out so that we can make sure that when you're in Google Sheets, you feel comfortable, you feel that you have your resources. And I find that when you're working together with people, it helps so much more than saying an us versus them approach. People really respond well to that when they feel and truly believe that they're being heard and that you're not just giving them something that everybody else gets.
Totally agree with you. What's your favorite part of this particular job?
Asking all the tough questions, Cal. I think my favorite part of it is when I have someone that I've trained who comes in with a little bit of reluctance, also feeling that they aren't quite capable of learning new things technically. And one of the tricks that I do that I pull from my teaching background is that when I'm doing an on-site training, for example, I might be at a company for anywhere from a couple days to maybe a full week. I see some of the same people over and over. And someone will start and ask me a question, and I'll help them understand what it is. But you better believe a couple days from then, when someone else asks me a question, I'm going to defer to the other person that I helped earlier in the week to say, you know what, that's an amazing question. I was just talking to your colleague so-and-so the other day about that. What do you think about this? And the first time it happens, they look at me like, what? No, you're the expert, not me. But then that's where a lot of this coaching comes in, helping them understand and believe in themselves, even for something like creating a filter in Gmail, because for many people, that's very difficult to do if they've never done it before. So one of them, it's just amazing. And this is probably one of my favorite things about the job. When I see someone who started off saying that they couldn't do something, that they didn't believe in themselves, and then they transition into being the person who can then teach something to somebody else.
That's phenomenal. And I've done my share of training, usually PHP training. And I totally understand where you're coming from. When the light bulb goes off in their head, and then they start sharing and helping other people. And quite honestly, I found that I usually teach groups of 8 to 12, and you'll have one or two in the group that, you know, they get it faster. And the other ones, since they're all friends, they accept this knowledge from their coworkers much easier than they accept it from me. And so, you know, it's just, I'll sit back and watch it and, you know, just keep an eye on everything, because it's just phenomenal to watch.
Yeah, that really is one of my favorite parts about it, because then you come back to them later on, and then they're taking the lead more and more. And it's, as with anything that you're teaching or when you're mentoring someone, at a certain point, you as the coach or the mentor, you've got to step away and let the baby birds fly.
Well, and that's a great analogy, because if you don't step away, then or if you don't step away and let them try it a couple times by themselves with you there, then they're not gonna step up when you're gone. So that's a great analogy, the baby birds.
Oh, thank you. I've been watching the Animal Planet, so that's where that came from.
Hey, you suffer from a malady that my good friend Mr. Adam Culp suffers from. Yes. You're a runner.
I sure am.
and you trained for the Chicago Marathon.
Yes, and
talk to us about how that was.
It was, okay. Whenever I tell people this, I think it was amazing, but it was the most painful thing I've ever done in my life, but the most incredible thing too. To give you some backstory there, I started running back in 2011. There's a friend of mine who had signed up for her first 5K, and she was telling me about it. And I'm like, oh, good for you. And let me know how it goes. And then I went back to eating chips or something. And then a few weeks later, she called me again and said that all of her friends who had been planning to do the 5K with her had backed out at the last minute. And because of that, she'd made the decision that she was going to drop out too. And something just kicked in for me right away. It was no hesitation. I told her, you know what? You've been training for this. You set a goal. I'm not going to let you quit. So send me the link and I'll sign up and do it with you. And I had never done a race before. Even the idea of running like 50 feet, I would be winded and just out of breath and done for the day. But I did it. I survived. And over the years since, I've done 8Ks, 10Ks. I actually added them all up before this to be prepared. It's a total of 39 races since 2011, including 8 half marathons. And so this past year, I made the decision to do the Chicago Marathon, 26.2 miles. And I travel a lot for work. I travel a lot for conferences. And training for a marathon while on the road is quite difficult. But part of it for me, I knew I set this goal. I'm going to follow through and do it. I think probably my favorite place to train was when I was in Edinburgh, Scotland, for speaking at the Scotland CSS conference. And I asked everyone there, so where is a flat place that I can run? And everyone just looked at me and they're like, you do realize that Scotland is not flat. So good luck. So I ran around a mountain and it was fine. But I've got to say, it's having done a full marathon, it's something I carry with me to everything else that I do, because halfway through the race, both my calves, I think, started seizing up pretty badly because it was a very wet, rainy day. We're running and you're like trying not to slip and fall. And you get halfway through and realize, I can't do this anymore. So I slowed down to a walk. I slowed down to a limp. And as I'm continuing to kind of creep along the streets of Chicago, they're starting to pack up the mile markers. They're starting to take down the timing mats. Part of me in my mind is thinking, if the race directors are saying this doesn't matter anymore, why am I still here? But I told myself, I'm not a quitter. I'm going to finish, even if I'm crawling across this finish line, and you better believe I did it. So I carry that experience with me through everything I do, and know that it's a certain kind of determination that I'm really proud of myself for.
Well, experiences like that will change a person and will stick with you. I know you've incorporated something into your classes from your time, from your experience with the Chicago Marathon. Give us one takeaway that you share with people about the marathon.
I would say the main takeaway is to really set small and actionable goals. Because if I got up one morning and said, all right, I'm waking up, I'm going to do a marathon today, or I'm going to be prepared to do a marathon, that just seems really scary. It's the idea that will make you want to quit before you even put on your running shoes. And whenever I'm training people, even if it's on something like how to get used to file sharing permissions in Google Drive, I let them know we're going to break this down step by step, because you've got to do it in chunks. You have to reflect on what you've done. You have to be able to see what you've done well, where you need improvement. And then also, by making it smaller, you're able to almost build it up like a snowball effect. And you look back over time and realize, oh, now as a result of me having done this in smaller pieces, I'm able to build up the stamina that I need for doing even greater things. So oftentimes I will train people who want to dive in head first and say, give me all the knowledge and let's do everything. I'm like, okay, no. Love the excitement. But let's slow it down just a little bit. Yeah. And people appreciate that. And I sometimes they even will say, trust me, I've done a marathon. It's believe me when I say slow and steady does win the race sometimes.
That's excellent. Hey, I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule tonight to be with us. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed talking to you. And to our audience, thank you for spending some time with us. I hope that you've found this to be a valuable investment of your time. And we'll see you right here next week on Voices of the Elephant. Thanks for listening to Voices of the Elephant. Voices of the Elephant is copyright EICC Incorporated and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivatives, Share and Share Alike license. To nominate someone to be a guest on Voices of the Elephant, visit our website and click on the nominate link. The URL is voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.